Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign with crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Details at sfarmmarketing.com. And by ADM, their FarmerView mobile site features up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids, and offers customers access to contracts, deliveries, and payments at adm.com/farmerview.
This is the January 10 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Today on Commodity Week, we'll take a look at this morning's United States Department of Agriculture's release of the crop production and grain stocks report. The WASDE numbers were out as well. Our panelists today include Chip Nellinger. He's at Blue Reef Agri-Marketing out of Morton, Illinois. Del Durkles from AgriVisor LLC from Bloomington, Illinois. And Mike Zuzulo is on the phone line from Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Atchison, Kansas. Joining us in studio as our special guest today, Daryl Good, ag economist from the University of Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Daryl. Let's start with you this afternoon. Take me through the numbers and the things that changed that struck you most from the USDA's report today.
Looking at corn first, I guess we'd start with the production number being slightly smaller than the November forecast. For some reason, the market had convinced itself that the number would be larger, so being slightly smaller, I think, turned out to be a bit friendly to the corn market. And then when we looked at the December 1 stocks number at $10.4 billion and change, that was smaller than one would have anticipated, even given the change in the production number, and would imply a very heavy rate of feed and residual use of corn during the first quarter of the marketing year. And that prompted the WASDE folks to raise their feed and residual forecast for the year by about 100 million bushels. And in net, we did see the projection of year-ending stocks dropped by more than 150 million bushels.
In previous conversations, you told us that you thought WASDE faded that number as much as anything.
On the feed and residual, if you took the calculated disappearance during the first quarter and took it at face value and projected that for the remainder of the year, you would be projecting a much larger feed and residual use than USDA is including in their balance sheet. And so it says that they don't expect that rate to continue. And in fact, we might see some new information in subsequent stocks reports that would suggest that December 1 stocks were a bit underestimated.
And Dale, as we took a look at those numbers, one of the things that interested me was that the United States Department of Agriculture, in fact, did adjust both the acreage and the yield for corn. What was your assessment there?
Me too much. You know, every time as we went through the fall and we would hear these good yield reports from out in the country, you know, you would pick up some of these reports that crops, especially when you got into the western corn belt in some spots, weren't quite as good as some of these wildly optimistic numbers were. So, you know, seeing the yield numbers come down a little bit really shouldn't be taken as really a huge surprise. The acreage being revised up a little bit, you know, that's not unusual for them to make adjustments on this report, because we've got to remember the data collection that they do this time is much more comprehensive than they do for the other monthly reports through the fall months themselves. So they had a little bit better look at really what they were seeing as far as actual acreage out there, and could compare it back into the FSA numbers a little bit better too.
Hey, Chip, when you took a look at the numbers, were you really surprised by the feed and residual number, and do you agree with WASDE's fade assessment of what that number should look like?
Yeah, I wasn't totally surprised, and I think the point being, we've come off some pretty extraordinary years here with the drought and a couple of poorer-than-average crops even ahead of that. And so I think that some of this may just be catching up. You know, we always have that issue about the old crop, new crop stock situation. And so some of this may have just been trying to catch up with all of that. But I didn't think it was out of the realm of expectations necessarily, but I think we have to look at it as maybe a little bit of a gift from a marketing standpoint, and be ready to trip the trigger on some of our old crop sales here, rather than getting too bulled up over the lower than expected carryout number.
Well, I'll come back to you and the rest of them in a moment and see what has changed in the way you think producers, or if you think producers, ought to be marketing either old or new crop corn. But I do want to bring Mike Zuzulo into the conversation as well. Mike, how does the wheat figure that was released by USDA this morning figure into the corn market at this time?
I don't think it helps the futures market, Todd, because we did see the feed and residual be taken down in the wheat, both domestically and globally, and, you know, put into the corn domestically and globally. So I think wheat, in terms of the futures market, continues to be a potential bottleneck in terms of the upside potential for March corn and May corn, and what the upside potential based upon this big production, or excuse me, big ending stocks cut, would suggest based upon some of the price models that I use. When you talk about people in Chicago before the report, it was not uncommon to hear people talking about a 162, 163 yield and production of 14.2, 14.3. And I think the trade really caught wind of that on Wednesday and especially Thursday. After the poor weekly export sales, it seemed like the trade went on a mission to say, let's really put in a big, big carryover, maybe even as much as 2.1 billion bushels. So when you look at it from that standpoint, you have about 300 to 400 million bushels less than I think the average Chicago trader, average end user out there was expecting. So wheat needs to play more of a supportive role for the futures market. I think the corn market and the cash side is going to be much less affected by wheat.
So we changed the ending stocks, right, by 161 million bushels for corn. I'm wondering, from the three of you, what you think that does to your pricing strategies. And, Mike, we'll start with you.
Well, the model I use would say at 410 March futures, which was near the lows of December and where we went down again before the report came out, Todd, would say we were pricing in a 2.1 billion bushel carryover. So if we've tightened that up to a little over 1.6, then you're talking about a potential 75 to 90 cent rally in the pricing model. And I would have to cut that in half, though, if we don't get the wheat futures to turn around and put a bottom in, and that the corn will have to play nursemaid, so to speak, and the corn-wheat spread will be very, very active here in the next 2 weeks.
Chip?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think that's dead on. Funds have a huge short position built up. We did close above the 50-day moving average, so maybe that's going to spur them, into some short covering. But I think, I guess I'm going to try to be really cautious not to get too bulled up in here and use that short covering by the funds to clean up old crop supplies and get a nice start and some protection out there in some new crop supplies as well. So I think it'll be hard pressed to get much over 455, 460 March futures. And that may be pushing it unless the funds decide to come out of the bulk of their long position in here.
And Dale.
You know, the one thing I'll go back to here at this point, and through our conversations and things that I put out that you read, Todd, we've been in this window for a 20-week low in the corn market, and you end up with a day like today that has a huge reversal up. We got a weekly reversal up, timing for a 20-week low. I think we've got a low in place that's going to hold for some time. Having said that, I'm not a wild bull, and I really wouldn't disagree with some of the targets that Chip had mentioned there. He was talking about up in the 450s on March. I'm kind of thinking 475 on July. The one thing I think it's important to remember here, though, is that farmers still hold an unusually large amount of this crop in price. So if anything, going forward here, especially over the next couple of months, we could see basis give up some of the levels we're dealing with even here today as markets move up, as farmers start peeling out corn on rallies. So the one thing I'd look at is maybe starting to use some strategies to lock up some basis.
And Daryl, has it changed your thought process?
You know, it's interesting. USDA really did not change their price forecast based on these new numbers. They're still looking at a marketing year average of about 440. That would, I think, imply that we do need to rally a little bit from where we are now if we're going to reach that level. So I kind of agree with what Dale said, that it kind of a short term, I think we can hold this rally that we got, that it looks like we've bottomed the corn market into the planting window, but a lot can change after we get into that window when we see what acreage is and what kind of weather is going to unfold for next year. So I don't, again, with the caveat that we've got to take the December stocks number with a grain of salt, and that the projection of year-ending stocks is just that, a projection. It's not a hard number. I don't think it's time to get wildly bullish, but I think we can say that we can hold this rally that we got today.
The USDA on its report changed the season's average cash price for the current marketing year, or the old crop corn, from $4.05 to $4.75 to $4.10 to $4.70, so they narrowed it by a nickel. And in the beans, they went from $11.50 to $13.50. Well, that was their previous range, and they narrowed that one up from to $11.75 to $13.25. So they changed it on both ends some, too.
On both ends, but the median is still the same at $12.50 last month and again this month, so I think USDA really did not see this combination of reports as a game changer for prices for either corn or soybeans.
And you agree with that then?
I pretty much do. I think the game changer could eventually be on new crop corn. The market has been expecting and that we would switch acreage from corn to soybeans and has been encouraging that a bit with price ratios. Those took a big change today, and I think the market needs to say, not so quick. Maybe we don't need to move as many acres as we thought, that we probably need to keep corn and soybean acreage pretty balanced for next year. And so I think this report, if we see follow-through from the March stocks reports, would be a little bit friendly to new crop corn.
Any dissenting views from the phone lines, Dale or Chip or Mike, on whether soybeans need to be pushed and whether this number today changed in combination with the corn USDA stocks changed the way soybean acreage might look in 2014?
You know, the one thing we've got to remember about, you know, this mix in here about acreage for this coming year, everybody's thought, well, we'll lose 5 million acres on corn and we'll gain something near that on beans. We got to remember the producer's situation. You know, if I plan to plant a field to soybeans, if the conditions change,
you only need to turn that on when he's talking.
If the conditions change by the time we get into planting, you know, it's easy to take a field and go from what I'd planned to be beans to make it corn. But when we're talking about a field plan for corn, it's hard to go back the other way because I typically have the fertilizer committed at this point. But, you know, Daryl was talking about the possibility of seeing another adjustment in the stocks number on corn. You know, we've got a free pass on that until we get to the end of March, though, and, you know, that's a window. We're going to be dealing with these numbers now for, you know, a little over 2 months.
You have to forgive me. I forgot that I've got a television crew in that's actually recording Daryl in studio with me, and I was talking to my videographer, but I had my microphone on. That's okay. Hey, Chip and Mike, let's start with you, Chip. On the soybean numbers, what did you think was of most interest?
Well, I thought they were all in line, really, with what the market thought ahead of time. I think it does, though, on the acreage side, open up a real battle. Now these numbers are out of the way, the market's going to quickly focus on how's the acreage situation going to shape up for spring. I think in short order, maybe as soon as the next couple of weeks, the market's going to focus more on that. Before today, I would have said that there was a tremendous amount of corn acres being switched. I know that's maybe not the general consensus amongst all analysts, but this just, you know, firsthand talking to producers, in our opinion, there was a lot of bean acres that were going to get planted. Now I think it opens the door up with 1.6 billion carryout in corn. You know, take 6-8 million acres away, and even with a big crop, with a big demand base, we're cutting the carryout in corn. So I think more than anything, I agree with Daryl, what this opens the door up to is some real questions and some give and take and potentially volatile trade in D14 corn and no 14 bean futures over the next 45 to 70 days, say.
And Mike, your view of the soybeans?
Well, the soft red wheat acres were about 1.6 million less than last year, coming in at 8.4, and so that would probably be, you know, those would be coming off of bean stubble, so that would lend the idea that the corn switch maybe is not going to be as big, and that the wheat acres were not going to be as big to take away from that corn. And I think that may be an issue down the line. I wonder in the big picture, now that the report's out of the way, other than South American weather and an 89 million metric ton Brazil production figure, which seems a bit low compared to other trade guesses in the weather, what feeds the bull and the beans at this point? And I continue to worry that the Chinese may start to cancel bean sales made from earlier because the Brazilians start to sell, you know, as we get deeper into January and February when harvest picks up in that country.
Nordell?
Well, quickly, one thing, you know, we had probably one of the most important numbers last night on soybeans, the Chinese import for December at 7.4 million ton, and new all-time record for any month, and that came on the heels of big imports in November and back in October, came on the heels of big imports last summer, and all last year their feed production was actually down from the prior year, which gives you a feel that they have built a cushion of inventories in soybeans at this point to kind of preclude or offset any potential slowdown in early shipments coming out of Brazil like they confronted last year. So it does keep that door open that at some point into beans, we could still see some fairly significant cancellations of beans. We've got to be wary of that.
Hey, Mike and Chip, I want to know what you think about this $10.99 and three-quarter cent settlement price on the beans. It was down 30 cents in the new crop November. Chip?
I think all week long, the bean market has not acted very well. I thought it didn't close very well today either. The meal market's been holding us up, and we closed, $12 off of the highs in meal, basically on the lows of the day. It could be the potential that we top the bean market here. I know stocks are still tight. I know demand's still good. But I'm watching this meal market, and if we've turned the corner and going to flush out to the downside of the meal market, you know, the bean market may have some room to the downside. It didn't act very well this week, even off of some friendly demand news with China still buying U.S. beans. And a lot of times when you can't rally on bullish news, you're ready for a reaction the other way. So also a lot of spreads there featuring long beans, short corn, long beans, short wheat. That corn bean spread could be in play as well. So overall, I didn't think the bean market acted real well this week, although the bull spread still worked. I think there's some yellow lights flashing that we may be in the process of topping this thing, especially if the meal market's going to lose some momentum here.
And Michael?
I think that Monsanto earnings number really flipped that ratio, that new crop bean corn ratio that Dr. Good was talking about a little bit ago. I think that was a big, big shift in the psychology of the ratio and the spread trade, Todd. I am concerned, like Chip, that it's kind of a caution flag here, but, you know, 1 week doesn't make a trend, but it's certainly something to watch here because it is profitable still to hedge beans, and I think it goes back to if we don't have any big weather problems in South America, what is out there between now and the March acreage report to give us those old returns of $11.60 $12, $12.25 November beans, those old resistance points that we just got done checking out more than 2 or 3 weeks ago in some cases.
Thank you so much, Chip Nellinger and Mike Zuzlow. Dale Durkles are in studio with us. We're talking here on Commodity Week. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. While you're there, check out our Voices of Illinois Agriculture event. Just a few more days to sign up to get yourself registered for our premier signature event for fundraising for the College of ACES. Our guest speaker, keynote speaker this year is the president of the University of Illinois, Bob Easter.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM, their FarmerView mobile site features up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids, and offers ADM customers access to contracts, deliveries, and payments. Available at ADM.com/FarmerView.
Let's check in on the weekly changes from the CME Group in Chicago as they finished up on this Friday afternoon. Nearby March corn at 433 for the high, the low at 406 and a quarter. Settlement price at 431 and three quarters. And finished 8 1/4 higher. December corn at 458 and a half. The change on the week, up 6 1/4. Both of those are outside weekly up changes. January beans, 1320. The high, the low at 1287 and a quarter. Settlement price at $13.03 3 3/4, up 14 1/2. November beans, on the other hand, were down 30 cents on the week at $10.99 and 3/4 of a cent, settling, of course, below $11. January bean meal at $4.35 20, up $10.70. January bean oil at $37.95, that finished down 39. Wheat futures at $6.12 3/4 for their high, the low at $5.60 1/2. Settlement price at $5.69, down 36 and 3 quarters. Posted an outside down week. July at $5.80 and 3 quarters on the weekly change, down 33 and 3 quarters. February live cattle at $136.70, up 40. The March at $167.65, up 45. And the February lean hogs today at $85.82 1/2 were down 85 cents. Now here's Ed Kieser, meteorologist, with a look at the South American weather forecast.
Dryness is quickly becoming a bigger concern in parts of both Argentina and Brazil as we head into the middle of the Southern Hemisphere summer. In Argentina, as expected, hot and dry weather prevailed much of this past week, with a cold front arriving to finish the week with favorably cooler temperatures. Showers and thunderstorms with that front focused on central production areas, leaving important corn and soybean areas to the south, including Buenos Aires, La Pampa, and southern Cordoba, with little to no rainfall. Now another week without rain is expected there. Moisture deficits since the beginning of December are generally 3 to 5 inches and growing. And with high heat returning next week, further stress to reproductive crops is expected. Almost half of the corn and soybeans grown in Argentina is exposed to this excessive dryness. The other dry area is across the northern production areas of Brazil, especially the states of Goiás, Minas Gerais, and Bahia. Hot and dry weather should continue in these areas through at least next week. While dryness is benefiting double-cropped areas as first crop harvesting and second crop planting is underway, it is becoming quite stressful for the crops in the vegetative and reproductive stage. Scattered showers and thunderstorms are expected to bring some rain in the coming week to parts of neighboring Mato Grosso, Mato Grosso do Sul, and Sao Paulo, but even there, moisture deficits are growing. The part of South America in the best shape continues to be across southern Brazil, Paraguay, and northern Argentina. Periodic showers and thunderstorms are expected to continue there in the coming week.
That is Ed Kieser, meteorologist, joins us here on Illinois Public Media to take a look at the South American weather forecast. Don't forget, you can always find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM, their FarmerView mobile site features up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids, and offers ADM customers access to contracts, deliveries, and payments. Available at ADM.com/FarmerView.
This is the January 10 edition of Commodity Week. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Our guest in studio is Daryl Good, ag economist from the University of Illinois. Daryl, when you looked at the 1099 number, I'm going to ask you about this. I would suspect that you thought that line, that number as we finished up today, was in line with your thinking as to what should happen with acreage in soybeans per new crop.
Yeah, I think... The one thing we haven't talked about too much and that's connected to that, Todd, is that we have eventually, I think, the real possibility of having too many acres of both corn and soybeans in 2014 if we factor in three things. One, 8.3 million acres prevented planted last year, 1.6 million acres coming out of the CRP, and a 1 million acre cut in winter wheat acres really opens the door for a lot of acreage of spring planted crops. I was not in the camp that thought we were going to make a huge shift away from corn to soybeans, although the market was beginning to encourage that. And I think what this 1099 number and perhaps moving lower is saying is soybeans probably got overpriced relative to corn for the 2014 crop, and we need to see some realignment there, either with lower beans or higher new crop corn prices.
Dale, do you have a question for Daryl?
You know, the one thing do you think producers, Daryl, really get things cemented in their minds about what they want to plant at this time of year? Do you think they stay to a certain degree somewhat fluid until we get a little bit deeper into the winter and the spring, especially in an environment like this and like the last 3 years where there's a lot of uncertainty now?
No, I think there's a whole range, as you know, Dale. We've got some folks still who are very much locked into a rotation and will, almost regardless of price, will stay with that rotation. We've got others that have done the fall fertilizer application, as you indicated, so they are locked in. But I think the evidence historically, if you just look at planted acreage relative to March intentions, for example, would indicate that a lot of farmers do maintain some flexibility, because oftentimes acreage deviates fairly significantly from those intentions. So I think that's still at the margin, still pretty wide open of where we end up on acreage next year.
Chip, a question from you.
Well, I guess, Daryl, along the same lines, if we were going to the field tomorrow to plant, what would be your assumption maybe on corn acres right now and bean acres, if you can put a number on it even?
Yeah, I have intended to do that, but I would start with recognizing that we intended to plant 97 million acres of corn in 2013, and so I would start there and fade that modestly. You might get down to 93, 94 million acres, I think, as a minimum. Soybeans, maybe a million or two more than what we planted in 2013. Again, just because of all the prevented planted numbers. I think one of the things that will really be important in cementing the decision in producers' minds will be the February insurance prices, what they can guarantee themselves with those prices, and I think that will help cement the decisions about corn versus beans.
You, of course, are listening to Commodity Week. Our special guest has been Daryl Good, ag economist at the University of Illinois. Now, a final word from our panelists. On the phone lines, we'll start with Mike Zuzalo at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. He's in Atchison, Kansas.
Well, Todd, it's great to be on the new program, and congratulations on it. I think the corn dynamics are still the same after this USDA report. The cash market seems much more firm to me, given the 1.6 carryover versus the futures market, and the idea that the cash market can continue to go higher into the wintertime, I think, was supported by those numbers.
Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef Agri-Marketing.
Well, I would say don't get too bulled up on this report today in corn. Use it as kind of a second chance to finish cleaning up old crop supplies. Watch the basis. If this futures market rallies another 20, 30 cents in corn, we're going to lose a lot of basis gains that we've seen the last couple of weeks.
And
so use it as opportunity and also carefully watch those beans as well.
3 seconds, Dale.
You know, I think we're in a window here for commodity prices to turn up out of a semi-annual low.